this morning is from Colossians chapter 3, starting at verse 18, and it's instructions for a Christian household. Wives, submit yourselves to your husband, as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Fathers, do not embitter your children, or they will become discouraged. Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything, and do it not only when their eye is on you and to curry their favour, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. Anyone who does wrong will be repaid for their wrongs, and there is no favoritism. Masters, provide your slaves with what is right and fair, because you know that you also have a master in heaven. This is the word of the Lord.
Good morning. Verse 18 is a cracker, isn't it? Wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Amen. I love Colossians. Last October, I preached on a very similar passage, 1 Peter 3, which starts, wives, in the same way, submit yourselves to your husbands. I clearly have lots to say on this topic. But is that the Bible's message to us in 21st century Ashted? Well, I'm going to give a brief recap of what I said last time, and then I'm going to try and build on that and take it a little bit further. So those of you who are here may remember I said there were perhaps three ways to interpret controversial Bible passages. So we can take one, a literal interpretation, two, a context-based interpretation, and three, a gospel-based interpretation. Most of the Bible should be taken literally, but not every word. The Bible contains poetry, so Isaiah 55, verse 12. The mountains and the hills will burst into song before you, and the trees of the field will clap their hands. Literally. It also contains parables. A literal translation or interpretation of Matthew 25 would be that the virgins should stock up on some extra oil for their lamps. I think the better interpretation is that we should all be ready for Jesus' return. And the Bible contains metaphor. So in Jerusalem, Jesus told the Jews, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it again. And they're all scratching their heads thinking, there's too many bricks. So take the Bible literally, of course. We should take the Bible literally, but not every single verse. We also need to consider number two, the historical context in which the Bible was written. And number three, the overriding message of the gospel. Jesus said his gospel message overrides everything. So I illustrated those three steps with an example from Leviticus chapter 13. It's a verse that says this. Anyone with leprosy must wear torn clothes. Let their hair be unkempt and cover the lower part of their face. They should cry out, unclean, unclean. They must live alone and they must live outside the camp. So if we had to take that literally, it would suggest that we should throw any lepers out of our towns and cities. We should treat them basically as outcasts. And we know historically, lepers of those times were often treated as pretty subhuman, worthless. Is that how the Bible expects us to deal with people with leprosy today? Well, allowing for the historical context that it was a horrific killer disease, there was no cure, it was highly contagious, it could kill whole communities. If that is the world you are living in, the instructions in Leviticus make a lot of sense. Does that mean we should carry them across to a world today where we do have a cure for leprosy? Thirdly, we can look through the context of the gospel. In Matthew chapter 8, Jesus met a leper. We read that Jesus welcomed the man with leprosy, touched him and healed him. Jesus then said to him, "You are clean." Now, through that lens, God calls us not just to care for lepers, but to seek them out, to welcome them, to accept them. They're no longer to be outcast, they're to be accepted in. You are clean. They're to be made whole, in other words. Our goal is to make them whole if we look at the gospel message. And that is the guiding principle of the leprosy mission. It's a Christian organization set up over 100 years ago. That organization took the gospel-based view of leprosy, and they have transformed and saved millions and millions of lives. A Christian organization looking beyond Leviticus 13, the narrow interpretation of those verses, to a gospel interpretation governed by Christ's love for all people. So when in today's passage Paul writes, "Wives, submit to your husbands," it is fine for some people to take the literal view. Husbands are in charge, wives should accept their authority. I think that is a plausible view that is to be respected. But I personally would go beyond that literal interpretation to stages 2 and 3. And I come up then with a different view. So I'd like to expand on that. And I'll start with an observation. It is utterly, utterly astonishing, miraculous, I would say, that the gospel of Jesus has changed the world, and yet he achieved that without war, without any violence. He achieved it without having any political power or any religious power. He criticized the hypocrisy of those who were in power, but he never sought to remove them from office. Indeed, he told his followers to obey the law. He told them to pay their taxes to Caesar. He told them to honor those in authority. He radically changed the world, yet he also conformed to it somehow. It's incredible. So a question for you. Do you think Jesus approved of slavery, crucifixions, punishment by whipping, the subjugation of women, the lack of any rights for the disabled? Well, he didn't call for any changes in those laws. Why did he not? Well, he didn't because he had a much bigger agenda. Jesus wasn't interested in changing the laws of one nation at one point in history. His goal was to change the attitudes of mankind forever. He wasn't interested in changing the laws in one nation at one particular time. He was interested in changing the attitudes of the whole of mankind forever. So Matthew 5:17, he said, "Do not think I've come to abolish the law and the prophets. I have not come to abolish them. I've come to fulfill them." Jesus lived within the political and religious laws of the time, and yet he gave mankind a completely radical new set of laws that have outlasted 1,000 governments and will outlast 1,000 more governments. And this is his manifesto. "A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another." And perhaps the most famous of all, Matthew 27, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it, love your neighbour as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. So you see, everything Jesus said, everything Paul wrote, everything Peter wrote, everything the gospel writers wrote, all of it respected the laws of the time. That does not mean they approved of the laws of the time. Far from it. In today's passage, Paul tells slaves to obey their masters. Do we infer that Christianity is pro-slavery? Of course we don't. That's just how it was. So likewise, when Paul says, wives, submit to your husbands, that's just how it was. In most places at that time, women couldn't vote. They couldn't hold political office. Often they couldn't own property. Inheritances passed to the firstborn son, not the firstborn daughter. Women were the weaker sex by law. That makes me cautious about a literal read across of that verse to today. Indeed, when Colossians was written, the radical verse wasn't verse 18, wives submit to your husbands. The radical verse was, husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. That's stage three. That's the gospel. Marriage is to be built on love and mutual respect, not subjugation. And it's the same with the rest of the passage. Children are told to obey their parents, but there's a counterbalance. Fathers, don't exasperate your children. Slaves, obey your masters. Masters, provide your slaves with what is right and fair. That's the radical bit. In every one of these cases, the laws of the time are being respected, but there's a new agenda. Love one another. Respect one another. Change your attitudes. Everyone is to be respected. Everyone is to be honoured, no matter what their standing. But there's a danger here. A friend in church recently, who I know very well, said that it is wrong to reinterpret everything to allow for cultural change. Her point was that the gospel message is what it is. You can't bend the gospel message to fit in with every different culture. If we did that, we'd have to have one gospel message for the UK. We'd have to have a different one for Russia. We'd have to have another one again for Egypt. The cultures are so different. And you know what? She's absolutely right. We cannot reinterpret the gospel to fit every culture. So how can I say what I just said? Well, Jesus' gospel does indeed transcend every culture and every time. It is what it is. Well, you see, my argument is not that we should reinterpret the Bible to fit today's culture. That is not what I'm saying. The gospel transcends today's culture. My point is that it also transcends the specific culture of Israel in AD 50. It's bigger than that. Can you see the subtlety? We shouldn't tie down our interpretation of the Bible to constrain it to fit the very particular context of Israel AD 50. Nor should we seek to fit it into today's anything goes culture. It doesn't fit a particular culture. It's timeless and beyond any specific culture. Well, having spoken quite generically, I'm going to return to today's passage and offer two thoughts. The focus of the whole passage is right relationships. In each case, you've got rights and they're balanced by responsibilities. Slaves work hard, masters be fair, etc. Now, I think in today's society, we are very quick to demand our rights. We are less quick to acknowledge our responsibilities. So if we have a sticky relationship, and we find that we are demanding our rights, I think it would be as well to ask ourselves, what rights does the other person have? What responsibilities do I owe to the other person? We are far too quick to demand our rights. Two of my aunts were really great friends, but they fell out and they did not speak to one another for 30 years. They did not see each other for 30 years. And then by some horrible mistake, they ended up at the same family do. And we all kind of stood back and wondered. Within 5 minutes, they were best friends again. All it had taken was for one of them to acknowledge the other's position. I don't even think they admitted they were wrong. They just acknowledged the other person's position. Well, since the passage is also about husbands and wives, I'm going to finish by offering an illustration from my own marriage. Rowan said it was going to be an exciting sermon. I do offer it, however, in the safe knowledge that Bridget is doing Explorers in the Hall, and none of you are going to tell Bridget, are you? Well, a few years ago, we had an argument, and it kind of lingered. It was one of those arguments. So for the next couple of days, I would say the right word was things were strained. While some men have the gift of charm and eloquence in such situations, I do not. I sometimes find it easier to write something than to say it. So I decided to, in my wisdom, write Bridget a poem. And it's such a special poem that we had it framed. Aww. But moving on. I guess I should read it. To my precious Bridget, my dearest, darling, beautiful wife, my closest friend, light of my world, love of my life. Let's make up, come together again, sing our love song. It's easy, let's do it. Just admit you were wrong. I don't think that really happened, actually. Although that is pretty silly, there's actually a very serious point. We have a choice when things get strained. Either we can wait for the other person to admit they were wrong, or we can get on and live and sing our love song with them. Which is more important, to win the argument or to live your life? Let me sum up. Jesus achieved the most incredible balancing act. He lived within the law, but his gospel swept all those laws aside. Laws come, governments come, governments go. Ideas and fashions change. The one thing that doesn't change is the message of the gospel, to love one another. So let's beware of unduly constraining your interpretation, my interpretation of the Bible, to reflect the culture of AD 50 Israel, or of 21st century Surrey. Jesus' gospel transcends time and culture. I'd encourage us all to sense check everything in the Bible against the gospel message. Love God, love your neighbour. And as examples of that, let's not be so quick to assert our rights. Let's think also about our responsibilities and the rights of the other people that we care about. And when our relationships do falter, let's always not be quite so proud and quite so self-important. Life's just too short. Amen.